Well, my father had a very sad experience. He and his mother and two brothers remained in Russia, and his father came over to America. And then when he could afford to send for them, he did that. But my father was eligible at that time to go into the Russian army. And the Russian army was a very, very cruel place to be. And he was a little shy man. So I don't know who did it, but somebody punctured his ears. So he didn't have to go to the army. And by the time he got over here, he was deaf. He couldn't hear anything.
Welcome, one and all, to I Remember When, Times Gone But Not Forgotten, a series of radio programs on the history of Philadelphia through the memories of those who have lived, loved, and labored in this, the fairest city in the land. Come back with us now to the days when America was the golden land of opportunity, when immigrants from Southern and Eastern Europe flocked to our beckoning shores, and Philadelphia was the nation's fourth leading port of entry, as we take you to the early decades of the 20th century in a program entitled Philadelphia, the Most American of Cities.
Abe, now 91, arrived in Philadelphia in 1912.
How did you make your decision to come to America?
The decision was, although I made a nice living there, well, not to compare with the dollars much in this country, but I made about $25 a month there, which there it was a nice earning. Being single, naturally. And they started, the revolution started somehow quietly. And I was 21, and I had to go to serve in the army for 4 years. This is the law there, when you're 21 years old, you have to go to be a soldier for 4 years. And we didn't like the government. They were very rough to, especially to the Jewish people. We didn't have no rights at all. Couldn't live in the big cities or in the villages. Not in the big city and not in the village. Restricted to many, many, many things. And those days was the boom to immigrate to America. That was the, those days were the real boom to immigrate. Thousands and hundreds of thousands used to come here. Doors are open and they accept anyone. As long as you bought yourself $25. I show them $25 and they let me in. I came here to a stepbrother, which I made him as my home brother, to tell him that it's my brother and that brother has taken me in. And this is how I came to this country. The decision was I didn't want to serve the army there, I didn't like the government there.
One of the fascinating discoveries of interviewing for I Remember When was the number of Jewish men who came to America as draft dodgers, who fled rather than serve in the Russian army, as did both Dave and Bess's father. The other major reasons people came are by now pretty well known. There was oppressive poverty in large parts of Europe, and in the case of many Jews in Russia, prolonged discrimination and persecution. Now, a great deal has been written on the history of immigration, the conditions which drove people from their homelands, the journeys across Europe and the Atlantic, their experiences upon arrival in the United States. In the next few programs, we're going to listen to the stories of some of the pioneers, the men, women, and children who left their homelands and came to the great American city of Philadelphia, some to make a quick buck and head on back home, and others to realize their own version of the American dream. In the decades surrounding the turn of the 20th century, people from Eastern and Southern Europe were flooding into America, with cities like New York, Chicago, and Detroit becoming great foreign centers. Philadelphia never became a major center for the new immigration for a number of reasons. First of all, its economy relied upon older industries, characterized by their diversity, precision, quality, and small size. So Philadelphia didn't provide the opportunities for unskilled laborers present in these other cities. It also had the third largest black population in the nation, so jobs taken by unskilled workers elsewhere were filled here by blacks. But even though a promotional brochure in the 1920s would proudly boast that Philadelphia was the most American of cities, thousands of immigrants did arrive through the wharves at the foot of Vine Street and Washington Avenue and settle here. Those who came were from all different backgrounds. They were rich and poor, college-educated and illiterate. And though most came from lives of poverty, others were attracted by the promise of freedom and the increased opportunity that America offered. Take the case of Sam.
Why did you come over? Why did your family come over?
Well, my father, as I said, he was a professional man there, and he was a very highly regarded man, because professional people, even when I came here in 1913, the degree of illiteracy in Russia was 87%. So if anybody had a degree from a college, I used to lift the hat to him in the street. My father was of that kind, and he was very ambitious. So he wanted me to be a doctor. So when I was 3, I had a tutor come to our home, and I continued on until I was 10, because you could not enter school there, gymnasia, until you were 10. But I learned everything from the Old Testament that I could recite by heart, backwards and forwards, to grammar, syntax, and whatnot. And when I entered school, I was very well tutored, so I had to be 1 out of 10. It was a 10% norma, or percentage. I, being a Jew, could only be 1 out of 10 passed Christians. If 10 Christian boys passed, I could enter if I passed. So consequently, I was very proficient, and I passed, and I got it right in. And then I learned first year, which was mandatory, it was a requirement. I had to take German. Next year, when I was 11, I had to take French. And the third year, Latin. Particularly for medicine, you had to have Latin. It was a requirement. So when I came here, or rather why I came here, was because my father's business went bad. He was a pharmacist. And he could not continue giving us an education, myself and my younger sisters and brother. So he decided, we read everything for 2 or 3 years, everything we could get about the United States, what a beautiful country it is, where it's democracy, everybody is equal. There are no case system where everybody must go to school. Not only can they go to school. So it was like, Mount Sinai for us. It was the promised land. And we came here with that option. My father brought us here, myself and my brother, to Amelia Stout School.
It must have sounded too good to be true, but an immense distance lay between the villages of Russia and the United States, and the journey could be filled with dangers, not the least of which were rapacious merchants and corrupt authorities. When Dave fled in 1912, he had been forced to escape on foot through the woods across the Russian border into Poland before making his way to Philadelphia. Here Sam, then 16, describes his own trip, a journey begun on August the 2nd, 1913.
We started by train from our town. We went to Poland, to Warsaw. It took us, I think, 2 nights and 3 days across Europe. And we were going to Antwerp because they had a much better line of communication. Their boats were more modern. But when we got from Warsaw to Berlin, the policemen, the gendarmes, what they called, started talking to one another at the station. The first thing you know, they put us on a train, and one was with us. And after a little while, they took us off in a next stop, someplace in the suburbs of Berlin, not in Berlin, but maybe 10, 15 miles out, into an encampment, but wired in. And they kept us there almost prisoner, because they wanted us to buy our tickets across the ocean from the North German Lloyd, which was the German government-controlled agency for shipping.
Huh.
And my father, who spoke German fluently, he was an educated man,
argued, and the other people couldn't even talk. They were crying, women crying, and you take the tickets or you're a prisoner. And my father wanted to go to Amsterdam. He wanted to go to Amsterdam. There was no way out, so finally, somehow or other, he settled with them, but they promised him a better reservation. Well, from there, so then they agreed to put us back on a train, and they took us to Bremen, which was the port of deportation. And there, we stayed 3 weeks in barracks. They gave us food, which was very bad, and they gave us bunks to sleep in, because we had to wait. That, you know, the emigration at that time was so great that it didn't have enough accommodations. They had to wait for a boat. After 3 weeks, they got us a reconstructed cattle boat. I understood, I found out later, that it used to be a cattle boat, but it built cabins and everything in it. And it took us, I think, 12 days to get across the ocean, so you know. The 20,000-ton cattle boat. And everything was very, very poor on it. It wasn't fit for anything, and we finally landed here by way of Halifax. They made a stop in Halifax, Canada, then New York. We didn't disembark there, and then the next stop was Philadelphia at Vine Street, Delaware Avenue, on the Vine Street tour. And from then on, we were immigrants in the United States.
Now, before we hear about immigrant life in Philadelphia, let's turn our attention to the other major group coming to Philadelphia in the early years of the century, the Italians. A while back, I talked to Mike and Frank.
You came over, Mike, 1913?
Right.
Age of 13.
Right.
Why did you come over?
Oh, that's the last.
Well,
the reason
the people came over in this country. See, I came from the southern part near Naples. And over there, it's mostly farm. Very little manufacturing.
Right.
Well, my father was a shoemaker. A shoemaker is not like a shoemaker. A shoemaker over there, you make the shoes. That's a shoemaker.
Like
over
a
there. He don't repair shoes. He make shoes. And for him, to collect the money was very hard. See? You have to wait. If you work with the people in the farm, you have to wait in the summertime when they sell their...
If the crop comes out all right.
If you work with them in time, because my father was pretty good shoemaker, so he used to take care of all trade. In the town, he dealing with the teachers and the lawyers, stuff like that. That was a very hard, was a lot of work. He didn't want to wait, so he came in this country, and he was here 5 years. And they went back, and he find the same way. I go back to America because on Saturday I got paid, and that's all the story. See, that's at least in my case anyway.
Right. Now where my people come from, they're all farmers. The land is owned by a rich man. They call him Baron, big shot. And whatever they grew, they would cut in half. He'd get half, he'd have his men sell it, and we would sell it. They never seen money. Everything was borrowed. They bartered for cloth. They made their own clothes. They bartered for. If they had a bad year, then the baron would be a little lenient. All right, you pay me back next year, which was piling up. Anyhow, it cost $40 to come to this country from over there. So we had a couple of uncles. They raised $40. This guy came to work. He went and worked for Stetson's. As soon as he got $80, he pushed it over there, and we got two more guys. And them two guys, they worked at Victor's. As soon as they got $80 and two more came. Then a few of them worked their way on the ship, you know? But they came here for want. You know, it was over there. They had plenty to eat, but no luxuries, no nothing. Nothing but hard work. And I'm telling you, they don't work 8 hours a day. It was rough. And they're pretty healthy. All the people there are pretty healthy.
Did your father or uncles ever talk about wanting to go back, or what was their attitudes towards staying?
No. A lot of them made a few bucks. I went back. I don't know of anybody that went back to stay there. They went there to see again, because you get used to this country, you get spoiled. You know, you got running water, hot water, you got toilets inside, a lot of things you don't have over there.
Mike's father, a skilled craftsman, had come to the United States to improve his lot. But he might just as well have gone to a half dozen other countries in Europe or South America. Italy was a poor country, chronically short on jobs and land, yet it produced many men skilled in a great assortment of crafts and trades. Consequently, the pattern had long since developed whereby young men would spend part of their lives as migrant laborers, traveling to different countries where they would work hard, live cheaply, send their money to their families, and in a few years return home. America was only one of the countries to which they went then, and most of them did not initially intend to remain here. Indeed, a good majority returned to Italy. But for many others, like Mike and Tony's fathers, once they got a taste of life in America, the desire to return was lost unless it was to personally escort their families back to America. Let's consider the case of Philomena. You say your father had come to the United States before
My
he brought the family?
My father came when I was 1 year old, came first. I'll tell you the reason why my dad came. His father and mother died. He was married in 1902, and his father and mother died one day apart. And they left young children. They left three girls and one boy. Of course, in Europe, in those days, girls had to have a dowry. And the young man, I was born the following year, 1903. So my father had six mouths to feed. Huh. And he went to bid for contracts like his father did. His own uncles had bid him.
Huh.
So he borrowed money to come to America. He sent first for one daughter, one sister, and so then he sent for the other sister. Then after 7 years, I knew my father only by a picture. I said, good morning, Papa. Good night, Papa. When I was 8 years old, he came back to bring us to America.
Had he been in Philadelphia?
Well, my father went, whether he worked in Canada, he worked all over, because he was a builder, wherever he can get a job. Huh. See, when he came here, the man said to him, did he want to continue, stone chiseling, the carving? They call it scarabellini. Now they do it by machine, but they used to do it by all the artwork. And he said, no, I have to. He said, I have six mouths to feed. He said, I have to work. So he worked as a stonemason. And of course, it's not one building. He goes around a different building. So then he came and brought us over. And that's when we arrived here, April the 10th, 1912.
Now, many Italians, like Philomena's father, did not come directly to Philadelphia, but came down, often from New York, in work gangs recruited by padrones, the Italian labor contractors, to work on the railroads. Because of the variety of skills they brought over, those who decided to stay in Philadelphia often had little trouble moving into other trades, especially street work, construction, and the needle trades. For Philadelphia, industries were in desperate need of skilled workers. It was the Italian craftsmen who built City Hall, the Reading and Broad Street terminals, the elevateds in many of the city's streetcar lines. Philomena's father, too, chose to remain in America, and after 7 years, returned to Italy to escort his family to their new home.
And it was April of 1912. I was 8 years old at the time. We came, my mother, my father, who had been in the United States and came back to get us, and my aunt, who was then 14, and my uncle was 18, but he was married and was a father of a child. And then my father sponsored a young man who wanted to come to the Americas. So we came to America. We made a stop. First, it was fascinating. Everything was fascinating to me, meeting different people, you know, and so on and so forth. So aboard the ships, here, all these big fish would come out and holler. That's supposed to be a sign of a storm. To me, it was very appealing. I had never seen anything like it. And then it was Easter week of 1912. We had a most, storm was terrible. Ship was going this way. We came steerage, so naturally it was one big room with people. The women were not permitted to come out of their cabin. The men came out and they said they had to hold on to a rope. So people were crying, they thought they never would see their loved ones again, and so on and so forth, and regurgitating, and so on. That's where it went on. But then, anyhow, we arrived. We came, first the ship was not allowed to land. An inspector came out at sea. And of course they came with the thing, and to me that was another thrill. They're supposed to, now I know they were public health inspectors.
Was this at Ellis Island? Was this at Ellis Island?
Yes. Yeah. And then we docked in New York. A lot of people got out. Most of the people got out in New York. Some had to make connection to Chicago. And there was a, I guess she was a social service worker that made sure these people were boarded a train, so on and so forth. And then they gave the little youngsters dolls and different things. So then we were to come to Philadelphia. It was a small group of us that came to Philadelphia. We came along, I always thought it was around Arch Street, but it was around that area. And then my uncle met us, and we came down, maybe they did have taxis on this, but I don't know, we didn't take a taxi. We took a rickety car that was called Third and Dock. See, Dock Street was the food center.
Right.
And a car used to go up there, I think it was an independent car. And it was a rickety car up and down, we went through there. And of course I had never been in a trolley car, it was a thrill for me. We lived, my uncle lived on Troth and Snyder, Mercy Street. So we came down that way. Then I don't know where we were, what street it was. Of course, you know, the Negro population was small in Philadelphia at that time. Well, these two women came in, and the style of 1912, you know, they had shirt waist, then a skirt with the belt, and they had a sailor hat. They were the color of chocolate. I looked at them, and I thought, I said to my mother, who are they? I had never seen a Negro in my life. And she said, they're Americans. Well, to my little mind, I thought, after I was here a while, I was an American, I would get like that. Well, I wasn't about to get like that. And I said, oh, I want to go back to Italy. And I kept on shaking my mother, I want to go back to Italy. But then we landed, we came to Mercy Street. The ethnic, the Italians there was just about three families. They were mostly Irish, the lace curtain Irish, and the Germans were in that area around 12th and Side, 39th Ward. Of course, the end of Philadelphia was here. And everything fascinated me. The rooms were small compared to the rooms I had been accustomed to. And then what fascinated me was a doorbell. They had a pull bell. In Italy, you had knockers. So I kept on playing with the bell. And what fascinated me was that they had to scrub the steps.
Imagine what it must have been like for a young person from a small village or farm in Europe to arrive in the great American city of Philadelphia. How strange and fascinating it all must have been. On the other hand, Sam was terribly disappointed. In the Russian city where he had gone to gymnasium, they had had all the amenities. Plumbing, electricity, movie theaters, streetcars. All the things one found in Philadelphia, but in a more elegant style. Now, you might remember from an earlier program on life in the neighborhoods that when Carmela arrived here in the early 1920s, she found the city intolerably hot and dirty, the stench so hard and the water so bad that she begged her father to send her back to her native Rome. But perhaps the most interesting account of the contrast between Philadelphia and village life in rural Russia, the type of place from which so many Jewish immigrants came, was given by Dave.
Can you tell me, do you remember your first impressions of the city when you arrived? Anything stand out or strike you?
Yeah, I noticed that it's big and it's nice, and many things I appreciated. For instance, one little thing I appreciate, it's a little thing, but it did a lot of impression on me. But the streets were all cemented. In a little town where I was, when it was raining, in a good rain, then the mud was up to here, and you didn't know what to do with that mud. You used to come to your house, you have to walk in, you have to clean your shoes, not to go home with all the mud. So you had to do something and somehow clean it out this way, that way, and still the mud was on. Nothing was the impression, the lights. For instance, in there in the little town, at night was dark, like in a room where there's no lights. So dark that people used to go, they used to bump one to another when they couldn't see. They used to wear lanterns with a light in, with a candle in there to see the way out to go. And when it was that mud, it was terrible to go out. But people lived, they used to struggle very much. And I saw that in this aspect, life was very, very easier than there. And it made a good impression on me, the lights and the streets, it's dry and clean. Another thing impressed me is the way they're dressed here. That people change clothes often, a shirt or undershirt or something like that. And also the bathing made an impression on me. I'm talking about little towns. And the little towns, there was, let's say, 500 people, something like that. There was no place where to bathe. In the houses, there was no nothing. You should bathe, or you didn't have no hot water. Water had to be, you have to go far to a place where you can get the water. And you're there, like. And those the richer people, they hired a man to bring him water, like he had a horse with a big bowl in with water, and used to hire him for a certain, for a year, for $2 a year, and used to give you so much, 2 buckets of water a day or something like that. The poor used to go for the water with themselves and carry them on. If you see on television, they carry 2 buckets, one in the front, one in the back, and right on the shoulder. Bathing was like that. Every month or so, a man used to go around with a bell and tell the people that today you can go in the bathing house to bathe. Take a bath. So he announced it with a bell going on all the streets to announce that today we have hot water to go bathe. That's how we used to bathe. In the home, you didn't have no hot water. And there you have to pay five kopecks or something like this. And this is how I used to bathe. You have to bathe. And if that thing broke down, you were without a bath for months. And this is a little town.
How did you bathe in America then, in Philadelphia, once you got here?
In Philadelphia? Well, some places had bathtubs. They don't come to the bathtubs now, but there were certain lakes there. But people, like single people, they used to go into the bathhouses. There used to be in Philadelphia too, a few of them, in a certain section, and they used to pay 15 cents or 10 cents, they used to go and bathe. And this is how we used to go every week. Every Saturday when we were off, used to go to bathe. And used to pay the 10 cents and used to give you a little towel and a little piece of soap. And after 10 minutes, I used to knock into your door and get ready and get dressed. And another 5 minutes, you have to be there, another knock, you have to be out to let audible in. This was in Philadelphia.
The public baths which Dave described were just one feature of life in the immigrant neighborhoods of industrial Philadelphia. Just think of how different life must have been for the thousands of people who, having arrived in the city, were faced with the challenge of finding a place to live, of securing a job, learning the laws and customs of a foreign country, and forging new lives in the city. Now, these are some of the issues we'll be going into in the next program. For now, however, I'd like to end today's program with another account of the flight from Russia. Samuel grew up in a small village in the Ukraine, occupied by the Germans during the First World War. As a teenager, he'd worked as a woodcutter, living on the job in a hut made of sticks. Then, during the early years of the Russian Revolution, he was drafted and forced to serve in the army.
So, here what happened.
Mm-hmm.
When I was in Ukraine at that time in the revolution, from the Tsar, and I find out there's 10 different armies fighting each other. And there used to be armies like Petlura, Kuchak, and other armies. Each state had an army for itself, and they were fighting each other. But there's only was the Bolsheviks, the only one.
that they had the Jewish general Trotsky. And he was the main general of the Russian Red Army. And they decided that every week he comes over there in a platform and speak to the peasants, to anybody that was equal to that time. Everybody, it doesn't make a difference what religion you are. And you come here and join the army. But I was listening when my father used to send me a letter. And he used to tell me that this country, United States, is in his essay says to me that this is a land of gold, but you have to work for it. And it's not like forced labor, like by the Germans or the Russians. And I made up my mind that was my purpose of my life, to get to the United States. But I had a mother and three little brothers who left there. And I was taken in the army there. And then I decided I'm not going to go, because one time I went through a certain incident where I was in a cavalry garrison. And we were going through a forest that's only about six yards wide. And it stretches through the forest all the way through. And we look at the forest there. It's like the trees, only daytime you see like little, like candles. And the Polish army that time was fighting the Germans. And that was after the war finished already. And I remember that the officer gave orders. He says, each body, save yourself by yourself. I can do nothing for you. So I remember I jumped off the horse. And the horse fell on my foot and scratched up all my foot. I thought it's broken, it's almost toilet. And I went, it didn't stop me from running away. I had the whole thing in my mind, I must come to here.
Thank you.